Here on Gadget Lab, we dive deep into the tech universe, tackling questions like, is giving companies access to your genetic material a good idea? And are the latest phone releases really that different than the last ones? We want to help you make informed decisions about what is worth your attention. And here's something that is undeniably worth your time, a digital subscription to Wired. Lucky for you, we are giving Gadget Lab listeners an exclusive discount, 20% off an annual subscription to Wired. Just visit wired.com and use the promo code GL20 to get 20% off a digital subscription. Use GL20 to get exclusive access to stories on the latest innovations like AI, deepfakes, and VR, as well as today's most talked about people in technology.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
AI is making waves in every field it touches. President Biden is now on TikTok, and the election draws closer each day. With so much going on in the world, it is hard to keep up with it all, let me tell you. Hi, I'm Kai Ryssdal, the co-host of Make Me Smart. It's a podcast from Marketplace. And every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I break down the latest in business and the economy with short daily episodes to make it easy for you to stay in the know. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, you ready?
Ready.
Everybody good?
Mm-hmm.
Energy up?
Yes.
Yes.
Lauren.
Mike.
Lauren, where are you? I can't see your eyes. Like, I look at your face and I just see sort of a bluish purple blob where your eyes are. Are you in there?
Hold on. Let me twist my digital crown on my Apple Vision Pro headset.
Oh, I can see your eyes now. But you still feel kind of like distant, like you're not really paying attention.
That's the thing with mixed reality. You're really teeing this up quite well.
Well, thank you.
You're there, but you're not. But you're here, but you're not.
Are you present enough to do a podcast?
I think we should podcast.
Okay, let's do it. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Gadget Lab. I am Michael Calori. I'm a senior editor at Wired.
And I'm Lauren Good. I'm a senior writer at Wired.
And we are also joined this week by Wired product writer and reviewer Brenda Stoliar. Welcome back, Brenda.
Thank you. I'm happy to be back 1 year later.
Yes, you are here in the room with us for our 600th episode. You should feel totally honored.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. It's the 600th episode.
It's number 600.
Congrats, you guys.
Thanks.
I wonder what that number means in like numerology. We should look it
Ooh.
Up. Might be a special number.
Look it up for the end of the show.
Yeah,
I okay. will.
It means the singularity is approaching.
We should probably tell people what we were originally planning for our 600 episode.
We were going to float in a pool.
We were. We had an extremely random idea that we were just going to go find a pool somewhere, and all of us were going to sit there and tread water with our little Zoom handy recorders up to our faces and record a podcast.
I mean,
and our producer was actually on board with this.
Sure.
Boone, the most excellent producer in the world. Most producers would be like, this sounds like a nightmare from an audio perspective. Like, you're bringing electronics into the pool. We were like, no, we're going to do this. And we had a pool in mind, and we were going to invite Matt Honan to come on the show.
Yeah. Or just ghosts of Gadget Lab past, I think.
Yeah. We had this whole plan. And then Apple happened.
And then Apple happened.
As per usual, Apple throws every life plan off and we drop everything.
But if you'd still like us to tape a pool episode in the future, we will do it for you. Just leave it in the comments on whatever podcast app you're listening to.
Preferably with an address.
An address for what?
For the pool, like the location
yes,
of the
if
pool.
You have a pool, if you're offering a pool, please let us know.
But unfortunately, today we are actually talking about Apple. Because this week, the company is holding its annual Worldwide Developers Conference. The opening keynote was on Monday, and there was a ton of news. The biggest announcement on Monday was the new mixed reality headset called the Vision Pro. Of course, there were other updates to iOS, Mac computers, the Apple Watch, iPads. We'll talk about those later. But we should spend the first part of the show talking about Apple Vision Pro. And before we dive right in, I want to ask both of you to set the scene a little bit, because you went to Apple's headquarters in Cupertino, California to attend the keynote, did you not?
Yes, we did. We were there in person. Yeah, I realized that this year, I think, was a lot more similar, I imagine, to what it has been prior to the pandemic, because last year was my first time attending, and it was definitely a lot smaller of a group. I think it was a little bit more controlled in terms of our schedule. It felt quieter last year. I don't know why. I don't know how to explain it, but this year it just felt like there was a lot more people, a lot more going on.
There was a lot of energy in the room. And some of that was almost undoubtedly because people were expecting the announcement of the mixed reality headset. So in the past, WWDC has been at the Moscone Center in San Francisco. Then it was at the Steve Jobs Theater down in Cupertino on Apple's new campus. And then last year and this year, they opened up the cafeteria area on Apple's campus, so that it's partially indoors, but mostly outdoors. It really feels like you're going to a music festival or a concert. There's a stage set up, and there are some executives who come out and do little greetings on stage. Tim Cook came out and did his infamous, "Good morning," you know, to which the crowd actually kind of chuckled collectively. But then they're actually just showing a video now. It's a pre-taped video, so it's a pretty controlled environment. And just to give a little more background, you know, WWDC is typically about Apple software, but in recent years, it has also become a platform for the company to talk about new hardware like new Macs and its silicon, because it now makes these custom chipsets that go in almost all of their products. So we heard a little bit about that too.
And we will talk about the custom silicon and all those products later in the show. But first, I have to ask you, you got to try the mixed reality headset, Apple Vision Pro. Like, what was it like?
At first, I wasn't certain that I was going to be able to try it on, because after the keynote ended, a whole bunch of us went over to the Steve Jobs Theater. And by the way, Apple's campus is huge, and like, just wear your most comfortable shoes if you ever go there. And we went down to the bowels of the theater, and that's where the Apple Vision Pro headset, there were multiple units, and they were set up like on these like stands. You know, there is, was this circular kind of what I'd like to call the hands-off area, because we were not actually allowed to touch the product. We could merely peer at it. We couldn't even like put our elbows on the counter that it was around. We were really being told by security, like, stand back. It was like being in a museum. And so I left the theater thinking, is that it? I mean, I got to see it up close, but like, is that it? And then afterwards, actually did go to a totally separate building on campus, which I later found out was constructed specifically to house like demos and meetings of the device, and went into a private room and was able to try it.
And Brenda, you did not get to try it, right?
I did not get to try it, but I was in that same hands-on, hands-off area. And I remember just like putting my phone down on the counter, not even thinking about it. And immediately, I swear, I didn't even see the Apple employee. He just popped up out of nowhere. And he's like, can you not put your stuff on the counter? Like, I don't, we put, I think, just a random thing. Like, I swear, I did not see him. And he just, out of nowhere, like, was heavily controlling this counter, this round table, and making sure that there was absolutely nothing on it. But yeah, I did get to see it on its little stand.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, basically it was like looking at an original Picasso. They were like, don't go near the artwork.
Exactly.
All right. So Lauren, you go into the private room. What happens before you actually put the headset on?
So first there were some calibration steps to take, where an optometrist took down my prescription information. And I decided to wear contact lenses yesterday, not glasses, because I kind of had a sense this was coming. And also they scanned my face and my ears. They used a Face ID-like app to scan like my measurements. And that was to create a spatial audio experience. And then there's a few minutes of lull, and then by the time I went into the private room, there was a headset waiting for me that had been calibrated to me. Put it on and, you know, adjusted the soft straps. There's one in the back and then one at the top. And I will say that the setup process was remarkably easy and pretty intuitive. Felt very Apple-y. I wasn't sure how much of that was because they had calibrated it for me in advance, or if it's going to be like that for everyone when they first put the thing on. There was a home screen in front of me, floating in front of me. And at this point, I was still in AR mode. So I was able to see, because of the all the pass-through cameras on the device, I was able to see the living room around me and the two Apple representatives who were sitting there. But it wasn't like I was seeing, like I was staring through totally transparent display or like glasses. It was like, it's hard to describe for people who haven't tried, you know, pass through VR, but it's like the room was being shown to me. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And then there's the dial on the front right of the device that lets you adjust whether you want to be in that augmented reality space or change the environment around you so you're totally immersed. So you open like a panoramic photo and you could immerse yourself in that photo of a lake or Mount Hood or something like that. Or you can have it so it's just cast in front of you as a 2D image, but you still see the living room around you. That, I think, is one of the more interesting parts of this headset, is that it does allow you to dial back or dial up the immersiveness. The other part that's pretty remarkable are the gesture controls. You're able to go through the home screen of Apple apps and then within each app itself by just tapping your two fingers together. It's really easy to like grab things and move them and scroll. You're not using any hand controllers. The device has just scanned your hands. You see your real hands and you just like do these pinching gestures. And I haven't quite experienced anything like that, I think, in any other headset.
So you have tried a lot of different headsets. And in what way is the experience of like the scrolling and the screen resolution and all of the things like the technical aspects of the execution? In what way is that different in the Apple headset than to the other ones you've tried?
So with gesture control, I want to talk about the optics because that's very important. But I'll note that with gesture control, I think the most remarkable thing was that there wasn't any latency, or if there was any latency in like, you know, milliseconds, it was barely detectable.
Sure.
So that seemed pretty impressive. From an optics perspective, the way that some of these AR headsets are designed is that they're using waveguide technology, where you have this little waveguide engine in like the temple or side of the glasses. And it's basically like shooting light into this display that then reflects the light back into your eyes, and that's how you see imagery.
It's like a hologram.
Like a hologram, exactly. Apple is not using that technology. What you're looking at are two 4K displays. Now, there is a limit to the field of view, and of course, when you ask Apple about this, they do kind of like a hand wavy, it doesn't matter, because as long as we've made the experience better than everyone else, what does it matter?
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, you do see like the edges of the imagery you're looking at sort of, it's weird. It's not a hard edge, like a square you're looking at. It's kind of like they do these like wavy edges a little bit. But you do see at some point there's a limit to that. But the imagery was really crisp. It wasn't fitted perfectly to my face in this demo, so I'd have to tinker with it a little bit more if I ever got my hands on it again. But it felt like, yeah, okay, I'm looking at Apple Photos or looking at a 3D version of the movie Avatar, or watching this incredible Jon Favreau directed like dinosaur thing where the dinosaur is jumping out at me. And it felt pretty crisp. I'm still not certain how long I would want to wear the thing for. Our colleague Boone, our excellent producer who I mentioned, wrote a great story this week on Wired.com about like, do people really want to wear VR headsets and for how long? And I think that's still a really important question to ask. But in the half hour that I tried it, I will say that it felt pretty comfortable. The imagery was really impressive, and the interface was intuitive.
I mean, it is important to note that, you know, we still haven't answered that question, mm-hmm. because VR is still something that is not super portable and it's still not acceptable to wear one in public. People like will point at you and laugh at you and maybe try to steal it if you wear one in public. And, you know, a lot of people have predicted that, okay, if Apple's getting into the game and they're doing this very like design forward thing, they could actually make the technology cool to wear. I'm not at all convinced that that's going to happen. I still think it's like deeply weird to like try to interact with people wearing a headset, but they have done things to the headset to make it so that it's easier to interact with other people, right? Like there is the ability to see the eyes of the person who's still wearing the headset. If you're in the room with them and they have one on, you can actually see their eyes and they can see you. And it's supposed to feel like you're interacting with them.
Well, what's funny about that is that I was not allowed to take photos of myself wearing it.
Yeah, probably that part probably just doesn't
work. So I couldn't see my own eyes, and then no one else in the room was wearing one. So I couldn't see if I could see their eyes.
Yeah.
It was a very isolating experience. Yeah, and I think you bring up a good point, which is that Apple has taken a very Apple-y approach to this and seems to have done some things right thus far in designing this new spatial platform, but it's still an unproven market. And one of the points that I made in a Wired story this week is that it's impossible to make this tech disappear. You can shrink it. Maybe it'll get to the point where we're wearing lightweight glasses and have this kind of experience. But a lot of modern Apple products have been successful because of the way they disappear into our lives. We all carry our phones around everywhere. We take them into the bathroom with us. They disappear into our pockets. We take them exercising with us. An iPad is an incredibly portable and slim device to use for work or for entertainment. AirPods disappear into our ears. People forget they're wearing an Apple Watch. It's a watch. We're all used to wearing watches. This is such an intrusive device. Face computers are so intrusive. It's hard to imagine people really wearing this outside of the home. Maybe they will in the workplace. Maybe in schools. It feels to me like a really, really big swing.
Mm-hmm. And at $3,500.
Oh, yeah, the price.
It's obviously not for everybody. It's primarily for developers. And in 5 years, there will be one that is much cheaper and maybe more accessible and maybe doesn't have a battery pack that you have to carry around in your back pocket. And then maybe at that point, it actually will be for everybody if people are okay with walking around with a computer on their face, which is still a gigantic question mark.
I don't think we're going to answer it in this pod.
I don't think so. We do have to take a break and talk about other things, but I'm sure we'll talk more about Reality Pro on future episodes and in future stories and for until the end of time, it feels like. It's such a big deal that it came out. All right, let's take a quick break and then we'll come right back.
This podcast is supported by Tools and Weapons, the podcast hosted by Microsoft Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Each episode features insight you won't find anywhere else from the center of the conversation surrounding emerging technologies like AI. Right now on the podcast, you can hear a special episode where Brad Smith lays out Microsoft's vision for a vibrant marketplace driving the new AI economy. To hear more, follow or subscribe to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everybody, it's Neil. I've got some huge news. Decoder is moving to Mondays and Thursdays. We're adding a second episode of the show. On Mondays, we'll have our classic interviews with CEOs and other troublemakers.
I think we're going to have to start having conversations about how do we pay those jobs that can't be done by AI.
And on Thursdays, we'll be explaining big topics in the news with Verge reporters, experts, and other friends of the show.
There's a new generation of people on the internet. Google search has always sucked for them. So, there's no reason for them to be loyal. They can just go to TikTok.
This is going to be really fun. I'm very excited about all this. So go subscribe wherever you get your podcasts now.
Okay, so let's try to get through the rest of the news from WWDC. We're probably going to have to do this like a lightning round because, as expected, Vision Pro sucked up all the oxygen. But let's start with iOS. It feels like a pretty big update. Brenda, you write about iOS and all the new features and iPhones and everything for us. So what stood out to you with the announcements around the mobile OS?
So a lot of the messages features stood out to me because I am somebody that texts a lot.
Don't we all?
And these feel like features that I was hoping would arrive one day, but didn't expect them for iOS 17. Specifically, the ability to read transcriptions with voice memos, because I cannot tell you the amount of times that my friends and I will send voice notes to each other and send the exact same text that is like verbatim. I can't listen to this right now, but I promise I will listen to it later. And there have been so many times where like, I wish I could just transcribe it and read it and then reply. And then I was like, I guess that would actually be a text message, though, if you think about it, because, just write out your text instead of sending a voice memo. So that's why I was like, Apple will never come out with that. But then they announced it and Lauren and I both looked at each other and we were like, oh, my God, like finally. So I'm really excited for that. I think the new catch-up arrow that lets you jump to the first text in a long thread. If, say, you're in a group chat and there's a bunch of texts and you step away from your phone for a while and you come back and you're, like, scrolling up and you're like, I don't know where I stopped and this started. So that just brings you back up really quickly. So I think that's cool. I really love the check-in feature, which will notify friends and family when you're home, because there's so many times where my friends and I will be like, text me when you're home, especially, like, after a late night. And they'll get home and they'll fall asleep and it's, like, 2 a.m. and we're all, like, where is she, you know, and we get worried and then we have to wait until the morning. So that's nice. It'll also let them know if, say, there's a delay in the trip.
That feels like a pretty big one, particularly for the sector of the population that has to use it more often than the sector of the population does not have to use it more often.
100%. I will sometimes call friends on the way home because I just want to make sure that they're on the line in case anything, God forbid, happens. So that's nice. It's nice to know that somebody will be like keeping an eye on your route. And yeah, I think I'm also really excited for FaceTime messages, which will allow you to record a video or an audio message when someone misses a FaceTime call instead of texting them and being like, why can't you pick up, or like, where are you? I'm excited to see how people will use that. But yeah.
Nice. What about the journaling app?
The journaling app. So I wonder if that's going to take off. For anyone that's not familiar, the journal app is a separate app that will provide you with writing prompts based on your activity, whether that's, say, you worked out, or it'll pull from maybe your photos. And it will give you a prompt to inspire you to write, you know, a daily post. And you can also schedule notifications to kind of create this daily habit of journaling. I personally have tried journaling since like middle school and it doesn't stick. But Apple does want you to sort of, I guess, take a pause in your busy day and reflect and think about your emotions. It's coupled with the new feature in the Health app that will let you log your moods. So I think there's this big push for mental health, and there have been rumors in the past that the Apple Watch will be able to recognize signs of any mental health struggles, such as depression or anxiety, similar to the way that it can detect signs of like sleep apnea. So I think that's great because we're leaning more into a space that does not get nearly enough attention. And I think that can be not easily diagnosed, but monitored in a way that can help people understand their feelings, emotions, moods a lot better.
So yeah, instead of just being like time to stand, it'll be like time to actually go do something this weekend because you've been in bed for 3 days. Also, we've detected grease on your scalp. It is time to wash your hair.
Exactly. Instead of just like staring into space being like, why am I feeling like this? What is happening? Like something that'll just tell me, it's okay, you've been really stressed out lately. Like, take a break, or, you know, go outside, like you said, or call your friend, you know.
So I do think it's a little bit morbid that they're asking you to use the device that you carry with you everywhere, that's always connected to the internet, that's constantly buzzing and sending you notifications. You should also use that device to talk about how you're feeling so overwhelmed. But that's just me.
You're right, because valid. It's funny that there are, I should say, screen time features that try and get you off of your phone. And instead of them being like, get a real journal and write your notes on real paper, they're like, open your phone and type everything out. But I wonder if this comes from a lot of people using the Notes app for journaling.
Yes.
Because I think that's pretty popular. So they're probably like, let's just make a separate app for this.
It's so easy to use. It's so accessible. I have to give a shout out to old school journals. I'm old enough to have started, you know, scribbling in actual notebooks when I was around 11 years old.
Yeah, you're right, Lauren. Young people have no idea what pen and paper are.
They don't. Should we do a whole podcast on it so we can help explain it to them? Mom, if you're listening, just burn the journals. But Brenda, what you said about the correlation to screen time, that really stood out to me as well when they announced the journaling app and then the mindfulness features. Like this idea a few years ago of, oh, you're feeling overwhelmed on your phone or you're too immersed in social media, we'll just give you this screen time tool, really just seemed like slapping a Band-Aid on the issue, similar to this idea of like, write your gratitude list here and we're going to give it a little cover art and also start to categorize it, you know, based on where you are and add some photos to it. You know, I don't know how much of a solve that really is for deeper mental health issues.
Yeah, I really am curious to see if people are going to use it rather than it just sitting on your phone and not really, you know, people not really paying much attention to it. We'll see. But I do know that I feel like on social media lately, journaling is like there's a big push for that. So I wonder if Apple was leaning into that as well.
Is it really private journaling if you're journaling on TikTok?
I don't think it matters.
Hmm.
Performance is part of it, right?
Remember when people got really into bullet journaling? That might still be a
yes.
thing. But people would yes. then share on social images of their really cool-looking mm-hmm. bullet mm-hmm. journals.
I think this is an example of people want to journal because they want to think that they're sort of fitting in with what's cool right now. You know, like, oh, mm-hmm. I'm gotta set aside time to journal every morning, because that's what happens in these like day in the life vlogs on TikTok. It's mm-hmm. like, today I woke up and I journaled for an hour. So mm-hmm. yeah, there's mm-hmm. like a big push for that. So I wonder, we'll see.
Yeah. I like a good gratitude list. I do them like probably 3 or 4 times a week. I really like it. I can't believe I'm admitting it.
Maybe
this
I'll
on
use
a Gadget Lab
app.
Podcast, but maybe I will. Maybe I'll give it a try. But it's true. It's like important that last night as I was driving home from WWDC at 8 o'clock at night after being there since 7 in the morning or something absurd like that and having my face in a computer, it was a beautiful sunset. And I thought, oh, that's really nice. I can see the clouds over 280 and the sun is just peeking through and that's real life right there.
And then you reach up to your glasses to try and twist.
That's right. And then I turned the dial and I was once again enveloped in my self-driving car.
You go back to reading emails.
That's right. Slack. Yes.
Okay. Well, we do have to talk about some of the other things.
Yeah. Let's talk about the MacBook Air.
Okay. 15-inch MacBook Air.
Yeah.
Exactly like the 13-inch except with a bigger screen.
So exactly. That's it. That's all we have to say. the 15-inch MacBook Air, I mean, it's the first 15-inch in that lineup. It has a 15.3-inch display, though, Ooh. So you get a little bit more screen real estate. I am personally very excited for this MacBook because I typically switch between the 14-inch MacBook Pro and the 13-inch MacBook Air. And when I'm traveling, I will take the MacBook Air, but then I miss the large screen on the 14-inch MacBook Pro. I just cannot schlep that thing around. It is heavy.
Mm.
I don't know how much I can say. I maybe saw the MacBook Air in person, and I picked it up.
Did they give it a soft strap and ask you to strap it to your face?
They did.
Okay.
They did. They did exactly that, which is
comfortable.
Very lightweight. But yeah, it's definitely lighter than I thought. It looks like the inside of a 16-inch MacBook Pro. So there's a bit more room on the sides where the keyboard is. The trackpad is bigger. So that might take a little bit getting used to. But I'm very excited to be able to pick that up when I travel and still have that big screen, but not feel like it's weighing down my bag.
And what about the chipset?
Oh, yes. So it is an M2 chip. It's an 8-core CPU and a 10-core GPU.
And is the M2 a new chip?
The M2 is not a new chip.
Okay.
It was announced last year. So that's powering the 13-inch MacBook Air and also the 13-inch MacBook Pro. So this is just the base level within the M2 chip models. It's the entry-level chip. So I'd say this is great for basic tasks, emailing, web browsing,
everything
photo
that we
editing.
Do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's, mm-hmm. yeah, the preferred chip for the average person.
But they also talked about the M2 Ultra a little bit yesterday.
Yes.
Yeah. So WWDC is now not just a platform for announcing new software. It's for talking about the underpinnings of all of their hardware products and
yep.
all of the power now that come with them.
Yeah, so the M2 Ultra was announced alongside the Mac Studio. So you can now get the Mac Studio with the M2 Max or the M2 Ultra. And then they finally announced a new Mac Pro with the M2 Ultra.
It's the world's most powerful cheese grater.
It is. It is. This yeah. thing is a monster.
Yeah.
And this basically closes out the M2 lineup.
Okay.
So the M2 Ultra is the last of that lineup, which means the yep. M3 is coming.
Yep.
But right now, the M2 Ultra is the most powerful chip. And that's really, you'll know if you need it. That's for just some heavy duty stuff. Editing heavy duty footage, 3D rendering.
Editing this podcast.
Yeah, Boone will definitely need that M2 Ultra.
Yeah.
So we do have to wrap up. But one thing I want to point out before we move on is that Apple didn't really talk about generative AI at all at WWDC, which feels like out of step with the wind that is blowing through Silicon Valley right now. With all of the other big names making generative AI the centerpiece of their developers' conferences, Apple skipped it. This was not really surprising because Apple has not really been flexing Gen AI muscle, but we had a couple of stories go out about this week. One written by our colleague Kari Johnson, noting that Apple really had the first AI-powered thing in our lives, which was Siri for a lot of people, right? Their first sort of encounter with a computer that feels like it's talking to you was Siri, which actually did talk to you. And since then, they haven't really flexed that muscle.
I think it's because Siri turned out so well. Sorry. You know what? I respect that yesterday did not just become Gen AI bingo. I really do, because you know that Apple has been making AI products for a very long time. They are almost certainly working on generative AI products. They did mention Transformers at some point when they were talking about predictive texting in iOS.
Yep.
But they weren't filling the conference with all the jargon and stuff. And I was kind of glad for that, honestly.
It's like, hey, do you guys like gadgets? Do you guys like widgets on the macOS desktop? Do you like chips?
Widgets were abundant.
Yeah. So they're basically doing the things that they do well. And stopping there. And that's pretty good, I think.
There's so much going on behind the scenes at Apple, too, that they've just turned the dial on. Mm. So we're blocked from that environment.
Okay. On that note, we should take a break and we'll come back with our recommendations.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Larson, the reviews director of Pitchfork. And this podcast is supported by Pitchfork Music Festival. Pitchfork Music Festival will take place July 19th through the 21st at Union Park in Chicago, Illinois. This year's lineup features Jamie XX, Alanis Morissette, Black Pumas, Carly Rae Jepsen, Brittany Howard, Jay Paul, Muna, Jessie Ware, 100 Gex, and many more. The festival also features diverse vendors as well as a specialty record, poster, and craft fairs, and works to support local businesses while promoting the Chicago arts and food communities as a whole. For more information on tickets and lineup, visit pitchforkmusicfestival.com.
All right, this is the last part of the show where we go around the table and we each give a recommendation to our listeners of things they might enjoy. Brenda, our guest, episode 600, special guest, you get to go first. What would you like to recommend?
I would like to recommend The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel on Amazon Prime. It is officially done, so the last season is out now. I feel like I'm on the show where I'm like, last season's out now, you should watch. but that is it's just beautiful television, and it's a show that is unique in the sense that every single season has been successful, in my opinion, and I think also just in terms of reviews. So yeah, I think it's just a wonderful journey. I'm sad it's over, but I know that there are a lot of people that haven't watched, so it'll only just begin for them. So I wish I could like forget it completely and rewatch again, but
oh, yeah. I know that feeling. Such a great show. I think I stopped watching after season 3, and now you're making me want to pick it up again.
Now you get to binge watch it, which is the best part.
So. How many seasons are there now?
Five, okay. I think. Yes, either 4 or 5, but yeah, I believe it's around that number. Yeah.
So. Don't spoil it. Does Midge Maisel end up happily ever after?
Don't spoil it. Let me ask the big question.
You'll have to watch to find out, because I know that there are people out there that will be so mad if I even give a hint, because I am like that. I don't want to know anything. I just want to go into it completely unaware.
Yeah. So. Want to go into it fresh.
Yeah.
Lauren, what's your recommendation?
Watching Mrs. Maisel. the marvelous Mrs. Maisel. My recommendation. So at Apple WWDC this week, I had the opportunity to run into an old pal, Ray Maker, who may not be a household name to you if you're not super into wearable tech or outdoor fitness. But if you are into those things, you've probably heard of Ray Maker before, or you've heard of his website, which is DC Rainmaker. But I hadn't seen him in a really long time. We taped a podcast episode together way back in the day where I got to just grill Ray for like an hour and a half on his approach to testing wearable tech and all the cool outdoor gear he gets to use. And it was really nice running into him again, and it made me revisit his website. And it is such a great resource if you're looking for a smartwatch, bike monitor, basically anything that like is tech that you attach to yourself or your gear because you want to get out there and do some athletic stuff. He does videos as well. I recommend checking out DC Rainmaker if you're into outdoor tech.
Nice. Is there a paywall? Is there a subscription?
Nope, it's totally free. You can go there, get product reviews, buyer's guides, how-tos, tips, all that stuff. So
excellent.
Check it out.
Nice.
Mike, what's your recommendation?
I'm going to recommend a book that I'm almost finished reading. It's called The Rest is Noise by Alex Ross. Alex Ross is a music critic, and this book is old. I think it came out in 2007, but it's excellent. It won a bunch of awards. It was a finalist for the Pulitzer that year. It is about 20th century classical music, particularly 20th century music, but it focuses on classical music, what we would know as Western classical music in this world. So like all the German composers and all the, you know, the New York minimalists and everything. Really excellent book. Like not only is it well written and entirely comprehensive, but it does two things that I really like. One is that it puts all of these big works that if you are a fan of 20th century music, you have heard about, right? Like The Rites of Spring and Salome by Richard Strauss and all the John Cage stuff. It puts all of that into very deep context. Like it really tells you what was going on in the years leading up to it, the big events or the big releases that you've heard about, how that changed things. The other thing that it does is it turns all of these people, all of these composers, into actual human beings who interacted with each other. Like there are parties that they all attended. There were groups that they were all part of. They sent letters to each other. And if you just listen to the music and you see the names, you know the names, right? You know, like Schoenberg, you know, Mahler, mm-hmm. you know,
Mendelssohn.
Yeah, like, you know, the name
Mendelssohn part of that. I just like that because I've been listening to a lot of Felix Mendelssohn lately. Yes. But contemporaries.
But what you didn't know is that they like hung out together and they had uh-huh. meals together and they had arguments. And it really puts you inside of those conversations because a lot of them were documented in letters and in journals. Maybe they use the iPhone app. I don't know. But anyway, I really like that because it's very humanizing, you know, to not only love the music and hear about how the music was created, but also learn a lot more about the people that actually created it and what they were thinking. So yeah, great book. I recommend it for anybody, especially read it and don't do the audiobook because then you can listen to the music while you're reading about the music, which is like crazy meta way that I like to read music books.
That's cool.
That is cool.
It's almost like mixed reality without the headset.
It is.
An immersive experience.
An immersive mm-hmm. experience. You got to twist that dial. All right. Well, that's our show for this week. Brenda, thank you for joining us. Thank you for flying all the way out here.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad I am on the 600th episode.
We're so glad to have you in studio.
And we appreciate you flying all the way across the country to cover Apple and to be here with us. And we hope that you enjoy your airport meal and your flight home.
Thank you. I'm not looking forward to it, but I know that my bed awaits. So at least we have that.
And thanks to all of you for listening. If you have any feedback, you can find all of us on Twitter and on Blue Sky. Just check the show notes. Our producer is Boone Ashworth. We will be back next week. And until then, goodbye.
Do you like chips? Do you like gadgets? Do you like new features in iOS? Do you like widgets? Get them all Monday at Dub Dub in Cupertino.
Invite only. Okay, did you get all that?
Hackers and cybercriminals have always held this kind of special fascination.
Obviously, I can't tell you too much about what I do.
It's a game. Who's the best hacker? And I was like, well, this is child's play.
I'm Dina Temple-Raston. And on the Click Here podcast, you'll meet them and the people trying to stop them.
We're not afraid of the attack. We're afraid of the creativity and the intelligence of the human being behind it.
Click Here. Stories about the people making and breaking our digital world.
AI machine.
Satellite. Engine ignition.
Click Here.
And liftoff.
Click Here. Every Tuesday and Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.